Hello, everyone, and welcome to So What Happens Next? Small Screens. My name is Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Patrick.
And this week, despite technical difficulties, we have done all that we possibly can to continue our Mobster May Marathon. And bring you perhaps the fastest turnaround of a lost episode we've ever done. It's The Godfather, Part 1.
Say goodnight to the bad guy.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender.
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
Carry that stink of the streets with you the rest of your life.
I like the stink of the streets. It makes me feel good. I like the smell of it. It opens up my lungs.
I want you to get this fuck where he breathes. I want you to find this Nancy boy, Elliot Ness. I want him dead. I want his family dead. I want his house burnt to the ground. I want to go to the middle of the night. I want to piss on his eggs.
Say hello to my little friend!
All right, so how's everyone doing today?
Doing good.
Yeah. Patrick, how about you?
It's Thursday, tomorrow's Friday, you know, it's always good.
Nice, nice. So we have I've called this meeting of the two families, I guess you could say. Yes, so we, just to clarify what happened here, as those of you that follow us on social media, if you don't, check us out. Just look up So What Happens Next. We got more than one handle, but we're out there on various social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. But if you follow us on Instagram or any of those, you probably saw a video I mocked up the other day of a certain scene from this film where, well, basically what happens is we get killed by technical difficulties, and that's kind of what happened to the Godfather, the original Godfather episode, which was all recorded and almost all ready to go. I was halfway through editing it when suddenly a bunch of shit happened, and it kind of went belly up. So, because we're, like, running a theme with this month, and because this movie is just, it would be a fucking crime to not talk about this film, we decided, hey, fuck it, let's just do small screens, you know, like, let's just do a small screens episode on The Godfather.
Yeah. Fuck it.
And just kind of talk about it since we already watched it, which works out. I know that during the Princess Mononoke episode, I said this was going to be 4 straight episodes of, you know, main feed content.
Liar!
But, you know,
shit happens.
So, you guys ready to talk some Godfather? Part 1.
Yeah. Again.
Again. Yeah, so this was mine and Amber's first time. Well, it was Amber's first time watching this movie at all. It was my first time watching this movie all the way through. And Patrick, you have seen this movie plenty of times. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I can't recall the number, but yes.
Right. So we got a bit of a range in this room about who's seen what and how many times and whatnot. My experience with this movie was just kind of like my brother watching it and me being like a stuck-up little like teenage indie brat who was like, ugh, fuck these movies that are supposed to be good. Like, I like my not, you know, my not my mainstream
movies. I like my
Scott movies.
Pilgrim.
Yeah. My Scott Pilgrim, yeah.
Scott Pilgrim versus The World of
Which I was looking back to the ratings we gave movies earlier, and I am almost a shit. I would give that movie a higher rating looking at the scale than I did in the Scott Pilgrim episode. Go check it out. Episode, I think it's like 33, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. But yeah, so like I was like just as a little stuck up brat about it, and like I didn't watch, you know, I didn't want to watch like what was mainstream, so I was like, fuck this movie, I'm not gonna watch this movie. It probably really sucks.
It's not a phase, Mom.
And it doesn't. Spoilers alert, it doesn't. By the way, spoilers for this entire movie. We will be talking about the plot of The Godfather. And so I like didn't really have any idea what happens in this movie because of the way it's parsed out. And since I only saw scenes, like those scenes kind of can stand alone. So it's just like they don't have to be attached to anything directly in like a greater plot. Amber, going into this movie, like do you remember what you were like expecting? Like what was your like reaction to your expectations versus like what you got? Because I think you originally had said that you wanted this episode to be like, or not this episode, but this film was going to be kind of like I think you had said like something along the lines of like Goodfellas. Like Goodfellas, but higher up in scale.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like I I had higher expectations for this film than I did for Goodfellas because it's been parodied like a lot in a lot of TV shows and a lot of movies. And I'm like, it's a big deal like in the movie industry. So I had really high expectations and it definitely blew those expectations out of the water.
I agree. I mean, as you guys know, I definitely went into this film with higher expectations than Goodfellas. Goodfellas didn't strike a chord with me, as it seems to have struck a chord with everyone I've talked to about this film.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
I talked to my brother, who's, again, really big into these movies, after we... I think it was while we were watching The Godfather, and I was just, like, texting him, like, my astonishment at this movie. Like, I'm like, oh my god, like, you know, it's like that every frame is a fucking painting kind of type thing, and it was just like... This blows Goodfellas away. To me, it just blows it right out of the water. Not that Goodfellas is bad by any means, but this is kind of like, you know, it's almost comparing apples to oranges in a way, except for the fact that it's, you know, mob movies is about their only threat, just like they're both fruit. So it's like, and I had said, I like this way better than Goodfellas. And I had said, it's nuts to me that Patrick, you had mentioned that Goodfellas is your favorite in comparison between the two. And my brother was like, no, I agree with that. I like Goodfellas better. And I was just like, what the hell? Why? Like, explain to me why. And he had a very succinct explanation of it, whereas he was just like, Goodfellas is like just like this movie that was made, right? Like, it's Scorsese's, like, I'm making this movie. And, like, it, you know, maybe it was like I thought, and it was like in response to The Godfather. Interesting trivia. He enlightened me to that later. But he was like, Godfather's like your prestige piece. Like, it's going to be better because it was always meant to be better cinematically. Like, it's not the same type of movie at all. And he was like,
right.
You know, Goodfellas is just like so much better. And like, I guess there's some, according to him, there's some degree of like, if you see it in theaters, it's better kind of type snootiness. So I don't know. Maybe not. I don't see how this is.
I think Goodfellas, like, it's very like, it doesn't take things too seriously. Like, there are some serious parts, but overall, it's like a pretty funny movie, like entertaining movie. And it's also a lot more fast paced than The Godfather. Like, Godfather is a 3-hour film, and there's a lot of things, like intricate pieces to it, which we discussed in our, you know, botched episode.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, like, you know, pieces to it that can get lost if you're not really paying attention to it.
That's correct, yeah. As you said, Goodfellas was better for me. And I don't think it's Scorsese's answer to Godfather.
Yeah, I'm starting to kind of backpedal that comment I made. Like, yeah. I think it's... So my brother turned me on to the fact that apparently, like, Coppola really got into big fights with the production studio over this film. And I guess, like, they were to the point where they were like, we're going to fire you. Like, you're not going to do this movie anymore.
Dang.
And he had actually said, I want Martin Scorsese to do it. Like, if I'm not going to do this film, then Scorsese's going to do this film. And so I guess I almost look at Goodfellas as like a very, like, you know, a different plot, obviously, but almost like a what could have been. Like, it just fits so many of those. It's like you have like a book. You're now adapting a book, and it's about the mob, and you did have a chance to do Godfather. I won't say you did, but then, like, you now have the chance to make this movie. So what does that look like, you know?
Yeah, but I think, you know, watching a lot of his different films, it's a different approach to others that were closer to Coppola's approach to The Godfather. Like, what's that one with Liam Neeson, Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield, where they go to Japan.
Fuck. I know what you're talking about.
There's that one. I mean, there's The Irishman.
Yeah.
I think is a lot what closer to Godfather. Departed, not as much. Aviator, not as much, but, you know.
Yeah.
I think he just did it the way he wanted to, and I think he would have actually followed Coppola's vision for The Godfather if he did have to take over.
I think so, too. I think it would have been a lesser film for it, not because Scorsese's bad, but because you're mixing directors. And if the last, like, Jesus, 5 years have been any kind of example of that. I mean, how about that? Anybody? Like, come on. You're mixing and matching directors in the middle of things. Or hell, Amber and I were talking earlier about the Star Wars sequel trilogy and just, like, all the director crap that was going on in there and just, like,
yeah, like how they were doing Rian Johnson and then had to switch back to J.J. Abrams and all.
Yeah,
because
it was like, what was that? It was like Abrams and then Johnson, and then the last one was supposed to be like Trevorrow, and then it was like, never mind, don't. And then they like had someone else, and then they were like, nah, we're not doing it. And then they're like, fuck, J.J., just come back.
Yeah,
like,
J.J., please save us.
Right. Well, let me set up some things again. But I feel like that's kind of like what you run the risk of, right? Like, I think Scorsese would have been really respectable to, like, Coppola's vision, while at the same time probably wanting to make his mark on this. Like, you're getting this big, huge, like, you know, prestige piece picture that's probably, you know, they're like, this is going to be our Oscar nominee movie, so no pressure, Martin. But, you know, at the same time, like, you want to make it yours to some degree, right?
Yeah, and he definitely has, like, a specific flair to
his movies. He does.
Yeah.
I mean, part of me is like, oh, God. Like, part of me wants to go, like, full in and be like, oh, my God, could you imagine if, like, fucking, so the end scene of The Godfather, and it's just, like, you know, they close the door on Kay, and then Kay turns around, she's like, so that's how it happened. And it's just like, oh, God.
Oh, gosh.
No, but I to pull it back to The Godfather, I think that this movie is very deserving of its praise. I think it's very well done. I think, Amber, you pointed out, to me, I think the way I think of what you said when you're like, there's so many pieces to this film, I think of it like, it's like a heist movie where they tell you exactly what they're going to do. And they don't make any kind of... It's not like a Edgar Wright movie or something where it's like laid out subtly in the beginning and then you kind of go, oh, on the rewatch. This movie's like, we're going to do X, Y, and Z in this film. And then you watch as they go and do X, Y, and Z. And it, you know, it does tell, don't, and show, really. But it does it in such a way where, like, you're captivated by it. It's beautiful to watch. I mean, there's scenes in this film that are just so, like, they've been parodied to hell. Like the horse head or the never ask me about my business and that kind of stuff. And it's just like, for me, I think the thing that elevated this above God or Goodfellas was that in Goodfellas, I could see those scenes coming and I was like, oh, this is that parodied scene, you know? And it took a little bit of that, like, and this is more the fault of this, having never seen it until now. But took some of that edge of the scene off. Like it broke the fantasy. I was like pulled out of it, right? Whereas in this movie, it's like I knew it was there, I knew it was coming, and I just didn't care. Like I was in it. Like I was just so focused and so invested in the film.
Gentlemen, you have my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
So, Patrick, you know, this is like your umpteenth rewatch of this film, apparently. What, you know, was there anything that stood out to you on this rewatch, like, especially that you were like, oh wow, you know, looking at it through a different lens, or I'm looking at it, you know?
I think because I haven't seen it in so long that Marlon Brando's acting really stood out to me and his role as, you know, the Godfather, mm-hmm. and how he kind of slowly transitioned into retirement, we'll say. Yeah.
I also love, I have to say, like, for those of you listening, you can't see it, but on the camera, Patrick is now, like, stroking his cat on his lap while talking about Marlon Brando, whose, like, opening scene is that cat on his lap. That's pretty great. which I apparently learned was, like, a stray cat that was just on set. And they were just like, yeah, fuck it. And he just, like, picked it up and just put it in his lap.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, just, like, started petting it. That's gross.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross. Well, I mean, you don't...
My brother also mentioned that it was Coppola's cat, so I don't know what the reality is. I think either way, it's kind of just like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like Coppola just had his cat on set because he's, you know, a quirky Hollywood guy or something.
Yeah.
And then Brando just like picks up this cat and just starts petting it to be in the shot. I don't know. But I agree with you, Patrick. Brando is fantastic in this movie. It's maybe like one more step up of activity than like Superman 1 and 2. Because he is mostly sitting. I don't think there's a scene where, there's very few scenes anyway, where he's like walking around. He's mostly sitting, sleeping, or like laying in a bed.
Or plotting.
Or plotting. But he's doing it all while, like, not being active.
Yeah.
And I at the time, you know, Brando would have been a big deal. You know, he already had his big, huge career go through. So I think it's like, at that point, he's probably like, okay, I'm not sitting down, or I'm not going to, like, do anything this movie. You know, yeah. He gets shot halfway through, and he's just like, I'm going to take a nap.
And that was the most surprising thing to me, was because I thought it was going to be about him. And then he ends up getting shot and later dying. And I was like, oh, so this really isn't about him. It's about his son.
This
which
is
was
totally
actually,
that,
you know,
yeah.
a nice twist to yeah. it.
Yeah, this movie, I originally thought this movie was going to be sort of like a person who is chosen to become, I guess, like Don of this mob group. And it's the character would be like kind of begrudging about it and like have to ultimately do it. And it would just be kind of like watching this person have to become the thing they don't want to become. And it kind of half does that, but it doesn't do it in like the same way. Let's really quick just recap what this movie is about. Is essentially this movie follows a family, a big deal mob family. So unlike Goodfellas, where we're following like kind of the neighborhood extension of one of these, we're following like the people at the top. Like they're among the top five people in New York who kind of control. And this one is arguably the strongest of those groups, at least in the beginning. And more specifically, this film follows one character, the youngest son, Michael, who, unlike all of his brothers and everyone else's family, is pretty much like not, he's not involved. He's like, he was in the military. He is, for all intents and purposes, like Captain America over here in that first Captain America movie. Like he's, you know, Mr. War Hero. He's, you know, legit. He has his girlfriend. They don't fuck with the mob. And you get kind of a nice juxtaposition in the beginning where you have, like, Michael's life and then you see his brother Sonny in everyone's life. And, like, when stuff goes to shit, when Vito gets shot, it's like, oh, my God. Like, you see the families freaking out. And the next time you see Michael, he's just like, oh, man, wasn't The Sound of Music such a good movie? What's that newspaper say? My father was shot. What the hell? It's like, it just shows you how, like, separate he is from it.
Yeah.
All. But I would argue that he's the main character of this film. This film follows his, like, reverse hero rising story. Like, he becomes his dad in the sense that he becomes the leader of this mob. And he starts as, like, this good person and ultimately ends up as, like, a bad person. Like, moralistically speaking, he becomes a bad person. Which, I think, on the last episode, we all kind of pegged his timeline to be, like, he's fine, he's through the wedding, and then Vito gets shot. And he starts to descend when he shoots the Turk, right? The drug dealer,
yeah.
Who ultimately is the one who shot Vito. So he gets revenge and shoots him, and then he has to, like, fuck off to Italy. And then he gets married in Italy, and, like, that wife gets killed in a car bomb. And, like, upon his return, he's changed from that experience. And ultimately, his final, like, nail in the coffin, you are a bad person now, is when he actually, like, yells at his now wife, who was his girlfriend in the beginning of the movie, which is the only time you ever see him get angry. I think I mentioned this before. It's like, the only time you see him get angry in this film is, like, when he yells at his wife. And that ending scene, which is so fucking good, except for the one fucking complaint I have, because I still stand by it, like I said in the last episode, they don't need to call him Don Corleone out loud. It's very clearly ADR'd. They didn't need to do it. They're kissing his fingers and shit. And then they close the door on Kay, his now wife, after he lies to her. He says he didn't kill anybody, when in fact he did kill his brother-in-law. So it's like,
yeah, brother-in-law who's a piece of shit, by the way.
Brother-in-law is a piece of shit.
I can't get over that. Like, I almost was just like, yeah, just kill him, because, like, he betrayed everybody, basically.
Right.
And then he was also a wife beater. So, like, that's enough for me to be, like, okay with that.
I didn't even
I don't
need
know
that.
How, like, everybody knew, I think, what was going
for
on.
Sure.
There were multiple points
in
the story where, especially, like, when they were having lunch or dinner together or something.
A meal, yeah.
Yeah, and the mom's just like, oh, stay out of their business or whatever, even though I know that guy is, like, being the shit out of my daughter,
right.
But yeah, I don't care. And Sonny is the only one that cared.
I don't know if it's so much that he cared about his sister as much as it was just, like, it pissed him off. Because, like, his whole thing is, like, he's a hothead, right? And I think he cares, obviously, to Sister. But I definitely would say, like, Sonny's the character that, like, when that happened and, like, his sister gets, like, the crap beat out of her, she's pregnant. It's a rough scene to watch, for sure. Like, if there was a trigger warning on this film, it probably wouldn't be, like, the killings and stuff. But I think that scene, like, the kind of abusive spousal stuff was pretty intense. And I feel like it was like, because he was like, that son of a bitch. And it's almost like, you know, you fucked with the family, I'm going to fuck with you back. And it's like, I got to protect my family's like honor more than I have to go over there and protect my sister. Because, for the most, like, I think there's a scene before that, right, guys? Where she's like, he goes over there and she's like, she's clearly been like beaten.
Yeah.
And she's like, please don't do anything. Like, don't hurt him. And he kind of, at most, like, just goes and, like, roughs him up on the side of the street. But, like, it was just, like, he was going to kill him. And then she's like, no, don't. And he's like, okay, I'm not going to kill him, but I'm going to beat the crap out of him. Like,
I mean, they probably could have found her, like, another husband. I don't know why it's so hard with a family that has so much power, but...
Well, I think it kind of goes around to, like, when he's yelling at her, when the brother-in-law's yelling at the sister, he keeps calling her spoiled, and by all rights she totally is.
Like, she definitely married someone of lesser, like,
who just wanted into the family
and thought that, oh, this was an easy way, you know, to get rich or whatever, probably. But you look at where they live and it's like, they're not getting any of that money.
They just have a bunch of, like, nice shit,
but like, he's definitely not. And that just kind of goes to show throughout the whole movie, like, you know, people that are on the outside versus the people that are on the inside, and that are actually, like, family is stronger than anything that's on the outside. But if you're with people that are on the outside, then you might as well not be, like, family.
Yeah, you get kind of pushed outward.
Yeah, like, very quick. Like, if you do anything to betray, like, the family's trust, it's like you're done.
It's over, Anakin!
Oh, Hannah.
That's interesting. That's going to be interesting going into the second one, because, like, Kay is married to Michael, and she is very clearly not an Italian person, not in it at all.
She's,
like,
very, she's American.
And I think she kind of, and I think this was maybe one of my complaints from the previous botched episode, was just that I wish there was more juxtaposition with Kay and, like, the other women. Very few they are, but the other women in this movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, I feel like that's going to be the driving force in the second film. Which, you know, we'll talk about when we get to the second film. But I feel like there's going to be a degree of, like, Kay's going to have a lot more screen time. And I think it's going to be very much, like, you know, re-emphasizing, like, these times, they are changing. Which is kind of, like, the really subtle theme in this movie. Is, like, stuff's changing and we have to adapt.
Yeah, and, like, and I could see her kind of being a, like, bigger threat. To where she's like, I can just leave with our son and I'll be okay. Versus, like, other women, you know, they, like, heavily rely on their husbands to basically, like, you know, provide for them. And even in the short amount of time of, like, Goodfellas, I thought they did a really good job with that. With Henry's wife, and showing, like, from her perspective, like, how she saw, like, the other, like, Italian wives, but then also her becoming, like, one of those Italian wives in the end.
Totally. I think that's points in Goodfellas' favor to me, is just the characterization of women in that movie, like, was a thing. Whereas in this one, everyone was there to serve a purpose. Like, Michael's Italian wife, like, she's not a character. I would argue she's a device intended to cause him trauma, because she has no personality. I mean, she just stares blankly at him throughout the film.
I mean, she's just like that, like, typical, like, virgin, like,
right,
doesn't know anything, like, very, like, sweet,
the naive and the child. But I mean, she's totally there to die. Like, she's there to die and make Michael undergo
and push him
trauma.
To the edge.
And it's like, okay, the Italian stuff, like, gets some, you know, it pays off in some regard, right? Whereas you have Kay, who clearly is, like, to some degree, like, they want her to be a character, because she has to be kind of that. I almost want to say, like, to some degree, she probably seems like she's supposed to function like Michael's conscience, or, like, at the very least, like, the old Michael, because in that final shot, when he lies to her, when he says, okay, you can ask me about my business this one time, and she says, like, did you kill you know, your brother-in-law. And he's like, no, I didn't do it. And it's like, you told, we just saw you do this. Like, yeah. The viewers know.
That's crazy talk.
That's not crazy talk. This is crazy talk. Sorry.
And she just goes, oh, thank God, and like walks away and just, and is more than happy to accept the lie, whether she realizes it or not. She doesn't care. And I think that's sort of like Michael killing his conscience right there. Like, that's, it's like, we're done. Old Michael's dead. Because, like, I am more than willing to lie to old Michael and essentially brush it to the side and let it leave the room and close the door on it. But yeah, I think I could have used more of the female characters, like, doing something in this movie. Because you could argue that the sister's only there to, like, spur Kay to do stuff and spur Sonny to die.
Yeah.
She doesn't really do anything besides scream the entire movie.
And yeah, the mom doesn't even do anything.
Yeah, and the mom would have been the perfect character.
Who was supposed to be like the matriarch of the family, but right. She didn't really come off like that to me.
Because she's not there.
Oh. Yeah, that's true.
She's there like a couple scenes.
That's the Italian-Sicilian kind of way
okay. That's
portrayed, so.
I guess I just kind of wish they like juxtaposed, like used her as a device to like juxtapose the Sicilian way with like perhaps Kay being like the, this is the American way. And like they don't, like they kind of use Kay to that effect, but they don't use, fuck, I don't even know her name, like the mom. Like Vito's wife's character. Yeah, it might just be mom.
Yeah.
Like, they don't use Vito's wife, I think, to the degree that she could be there. And I think it might have bloated the movie with a little bit too much family crap, but at the same time, like, it would have given me a nice like juxtaposition of, hey, what's, like, what is this old Sicilian way? You know, because we're talking about it. We're talking about everything's changing, but we're not showing the change as much. Yeah,
besides, like, in the realm of, like, you know, the different mob families. Right. And then also, like, their regions, I guess, of, like, control. And then also, like,
the drugs.
Yeah, the drugs is a big thing, too.
Yeah.
So going from, like, just, oh, like, petty crimes, basically. Right. Like, gambling and, like, prostitution, stuff like that, and then right. going to something that's like
a bit,
you know,
harder.
Yeah, that's like federal level.
Yeah, where it's like, let's give them people hard drugs and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, which could potentially like land us in jail for, or prison for, a really long time.
And I think that's kind of like the arc for Vito. I'm trying to hold on to the old ways so much.
It
ultimately ends where he kind of gets like his fall, his final realization of it all is that he gets effectively strong-armed. Like, who was once, like, the most powerful mob boss in this area, at least, gets strong-armed into, like, you're going to sell drugs, like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Or you're at least going to let us sell the drugs. No more of this shit of us killing each other. And he just kind of has to roll over and accept it. Ultimately, though, Michael pulls the fucking badass move and kills everybody. But odds are he just absorbed that drug business, and it's not like it can just go away, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is unfortunately lucrative. So
I think that's something that they're probably going to have to deal with, like, in the next one.
Yeah.
Just, like, how are we going to do this, like, and how are we going to do it without it becoming, like, out of control, as we saw in, like, Goodfellas.
Right. No, I totally agree. I think that's where we're going to really see the big scale versus small scale between Goodfellas and Godfathers. It's like, on the small scale, you could be, like, in it, you know, you're getting high on your own supply kind of type thing.
Yeah.
Whereas on the Godfather scale, you're not even touching the drugs. You have people doing that in the background. You're just telling them where to go.
Yeah, it's like weapons. Like, you might not be using them, but like somebody else is going to use them. So.
Exactly.
Drugs. Some of the big kids do them.
Just say no. Be your own best friend.
Get dare in your kid's school too by visiting Country Style Donuts.
And this, let's like talk about the characters here. So, I mean, like, of all the characters, really quick, did anybody have a favorite?
For me, it would have to be Vito.
Okay. Defend yourself. Why Vito specifically? He's barely in the movie, for Christ's sake.
I know he's barely in the movie, but his presence and his respect that he demands on screen every time he's in a scene. And the fact that he really does care about his family.
Yeah.
And he's really upset at the end of the movie where Michael takes over.
God, I love
and
that.
And you can see that.
No, you're absolutely right. I love that That scene between him and Michael, played by Al Pacino, where he's like, I never wanted any of this for you. It's just like, the way Brando delivers it, because it's kind of a short, almost throwaway bit. Like, there's no, like, rising up music to meet the emotion or anything of, like, huge significance that's memorable. But he, like, goes and he says, like, you could have been senator, you could have been congressman, whatever the hell. And it just was like, despite the fact that this man controls those types of people, like, they make a very big point throughout the film to tell you that Vito Corleone's got them in his pocket. He still holds more respect for that job than his own, which is arguably a superior position power-wise. And it's just like, Michael's like, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry, it's fine, it's fine. And it's just like,
is he though?
I think that's really where the handoff happens between Vito and Michael's there. That's when Vito, or when Michael really becomes Dawn. Because it's like, no, it's fine. I got this. And it's like, no, but you were never meant to have this. You shouldn't want to have this. And it's like, you do, and you are, and fuck, I failed as a dad, but whatever. And he gets to die as a happy grandpa in the garden with his son.
Yeah, that was kind of sweet, even though that kid had no idea what the fuck he was doing, but he was there.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not proud to share this, but the truth is I just kept crawling and it kept working.
Amber, did you happen to have a favorite character in this film?
Vito was a really good one, but I think I really liked Michael because I liked his descent into, like, into the darkness, basically. Yeah.
It's true, though. That's what I would call his movie. It's a descent into darkness.
Yeah, because you come to the point where he's, like, lying.
Yeah.
And, like, he, even from the beginning, he was super honest with Kay about, like, you know, even bad shit.
Yeah,
like,
too much.
This is how my dad, like, this is my dad's job. Like, he just told her that while they were dating. And I'm just like, you don't just tell someone that when you're, like, just dating them.
Totally.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, one of the masterful things that this movie does is, like, the way it bookends itself with, like, the wedding in the beginning and then, like, a death at the end of the film. But also, like, well, like, the death of one of the people that got married, no less, like, at the end of the film.
Yeah.
But it's that, like, when he shows up to the wedding with Kay, you get these, like, visual motifs of him, like, dragging Kay into the family picture and, like, therefore, you know, right there, it's like, I'm going to drag you into this life, whether you kind of like it or not.
Yeah.
And then it's also, like, she keeps asking him questions, like, you said, like, what does your dad do? And he's just kind of like, they do these sketchy shit things because they're clearly part of the mob without telling you they're part of the mob. And she's like, oh, well, you're never going to be like that, right? And he's like, no, I'll never be like that. And it's fine. And then the end of the movie, it's I'm saying the same thing, basically, but it's all bullshit. And, like, that, I think, is the nice bookend to this film, is it's, like, you're taking almost the same thing that was said. It's like if I started a movie saying, like, oh, man, the sky is blue, and then I end the movie while I say, like, the sky is blue, but it has a completely different meaning given the context of all the events that have happened. And I think that's such a cool thing that this movie pulls off, like, fantastically. He's like, no, I didn't kill him. And it's like, it's just like the beginning of the movie. It's like, oh, I'm not lying to you.
Oh, no. Anyway, last week.
If I had to pick a favorite character personally, I would say, I gotta agree with you, Patrick. I think I like Vito. Don't get me wrong, I love watching the story of Michael occur here. I'm gonna maybe, like, save him for my favorite character for the second movie, just in case. But I just love, like, the little bits that Brando's awake and on screen, like, which are arguably about 50-50. He's just great. Like, he pulls off this, he demands the respect of both the viewer and the people around him. And the way that this movie portrays Vito Corleone as, like, not just, like, I'm a maniacal, like, he reminds me of, like, classy Pauly. Like, from Goodfellas, because, like, Pauly had that, like, nice grandpa energy by the end, and Vito Corleone totally has that energy by the end of the film. But at the same time, like, they're willing to do the dirty shit, but they're also willing to acknowledge the shit that needs to be done, you know, well, even if it is, like, somewhat beneficial just to them. So it's kind of just like, Like the way Brando plays it is fantastic. Like I believe every minute of it. Like if you told me, yeah, this is a mob boss, I'd be like, this is an accurate representation, because it's not about how much crime can I do. It's about like amassing that power and like using it in a way that you like can maintain it. Like you're not gonna just be like, okay, everybody gets whacked and everybody gets drugs. It's like, no, sometimes I'm gonna get this guy's like daughter's boyfriend to get citizenship because the government's fucking him over, like in the beginning of the movie. And then other times I'm gonna go send some goons out to beat the shit out of this dude who, you know, tried to take advantage of this guy's daughter. Like, it's an interesting like play on the character, and I think it's cool because it kind of shows that Vito still has like some kind of morals, like something he came to America with and like wanted to keep, and then amassed power in order to do it.
Remember, with great power comes great responsibility.
And I'm kind of wondering, like, if in the second movie, it's going to be the opposite. Like, if Michael's going to play the other way. Like, I turned evil and lost my morals, so, like, how much is that power going to corrupt me? Because I get the feeling, like, Vito is, like, I had absolute power and I wasn't corrupted really at all. Like, my perhaps moral, like, trajectory skewed a little gray because I have to do some sketch things. But I feel like he never really lost it. Whereas I feel like Michael had it and had to sacrifice it in order to become this guy. So, like, what the fuck is that gonna look like, you know?
I knew that Santana was gonna have to go through all this. And Fredo. I never wanted this for you.
Let's talk about the Vols character, Tom Hagen.
Let's talk about,
you know,
Tom.
As the adopted son that Sonny found on the street, you know, and that he plays such a major role within the family, it's kind of surprising.
He was my favorite character for the majority of this film. Like, I like Vito better, but for a long chunk of this movie, Tom was my favorite
character. Yeah, because Michael wasn't really there in, like, the first part. Right. Like, he was, mm-hmm. like you said, out doing his own thing, hanging out with Kay.
Off to Italy for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he wasn't really there. But like Tom was like, I really liked Tom as well, because he was kind of like that voice of reason, especially when you had Sonny, who was like, you know, the hothead, like ready to just like gun mm-hmm. down everyone. He's like, no, we need to do this in, you know, a specific way, because otherwise we're going to land ourselves in like hot water. We're not going to be able to like come back from that. So... And totally. I loved how he met with, like, different people. Like, if first they would, like, you know, go to people and try and, like, figure something out. But if it didn't work out, then you would have, like, someone come and try and kill you.
Absolutely.
Lucas Bracco or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
you would have him come knock on your door. But, yeah.
Patrick, what did you think of Tom's character?
I liked it. I mean, it's because he had a different point of view. And I mean, you know, he went to school because he felt an obligation to the family to continue helping them once they took him in. So he went to school, became a lawyer, and advised all of them as best he could in whatever situation arose.
For sure. And I think it's, first off, like, with Tom, I love that like real introduction of Tom with the horse, the famous horse head scene. That whole sequence is fucking stellar. Like, Tom, like, I just love the way everything's like, of course it's all juxtaposition, right? Like that's art. It's all juxtapose X with Y, and to the way they do it. So basically, for those of you who haven't seen it and are still apparently listening to this episode, you know, a singer who apparently was offensive to Frank Sinatra, coded as Frank Sinatra in the film, but not, wants to be in a movie that he's perfect for, but the producer refuses to hire him to be the actor in this movie.
Good. You don't understand. Johnny Fontaine never gets that movie. That part is perfect for him. It'll make him a big star. Now I'm going to run him out of the business.
And after getting slapped around by Vito for a few minutes, Vito's like, okay, fine. Tom's going to go and talk to this producer, and they're going to put him in the movie. And the whole issue is that not quite Frank Sinatra, like, basically got this girl that they had been grooming for years and invested thousands in to be an actress to give it all up, not be an actress anymore. What'd you guys take from that? I thought it was going to be like he knocked her up and like it kind of screwed everything. But he doesn't say that. He's just like, and she threw it all away. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah, and I was like, to be with him? Because clearly he's still right. here. So, like, yeah. why... I didn't know. Like, that was a little confusing.
I think he kind of used and abused her, and maybe she did a little drugs on the side with him type of thing.
So it ruined her image.
And then she just... Yeah, it ruined her image, and she just kept going down instead of, trying to clean herself up. I mean, that's the way I take it.
Yeah, I guess I was initially prepared for, like, she became his baby mama, and it was one of those, like, oh, I promise I love you, baby, like, let's raise this kid together, and then he just kind of was like, nope, and, like, bailed after she was like, I'm gonna keep this kid, which, by that point, like, it's over in that world, right? Like, back then, damaged goods kid or whatever really shitty misogynistic crap they believed back then. But basically he does that, and so the producer's like, fuck you. You will never be like in this world. Like, you're not gonna fucking do it. And so he like yells at Tom about all this shit after inviting him over to dinner, and he's just like, I want you to put this guy in, Vito Corleone wants you to put this guy in your movie. And he's like, I'm never putting this movie. He's like, okay. Like, Tom, this whole time, the juxtaposition between the movie producer and Tom is insane. Like, this Hollywood dude is flying off the fucking handle left and right.
Yeah.
And he's like calling him all these like racist names, all this other shit. I thought that was a mildly comedic scene, because he calls him a bunch of like Italian slurs. And he's like, yeah. I'm Irish, sir, or something to that effect. And he's just like, oh, then you're... And just like, let me pull out my other list of, like, slurs I can use on you. And he, like, says them all, and it's kind of this, like, I've heard them all. I don't really give a shit. I'm a lawyer. Like, I'm not going to get goaded by you. And at the end, he's just like, yeah, okay, I got to go tell my boss that you said no. He doesn't like waiting for bad news. And the next morning, you have this amazing fucking sequence where it's like the producer wakes up and his prized... like horse that he was going to put out the stud, the severed head of this thing, blood and all, is just in this bed with him, and he's just screaming as we're like zooming out of his house. And I'm just like, fuck, what a way to introduce Tom. Like, what a fucking way to do it. It's like he leaves and he's like, hey, yeah, he said no. It's like, okay, I know what to do. And it's like, cut a fucking horse's head off, or at the very least, like, tell me what'll hurt him. Because yeah. I don't believe that Tom's the one chopping his horse's head off.
No, definitely not.
But I think it's like, okay, you're going to get these guys, tell him where to hurt him most. And he's like, oh yeah, his horse. Like, cut that fucking horse's head off. Like, I could see Tom being like what Michael was almost would have been if he was part of it all the time. That evil mastermind that like knows where to hurt you, and because he's a lawyer, knows how to get away with it. And just like telling the guys, this is what you're going to do, you know? But I like Tom. I think Tom's great. For the first half of the movie, I really liked him. And then when they kind of kick him to the curb, like, I was sort of like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
like,
but then he's, like, going to come back anyways, yeah. I feel like.
Which you got to wonder, is there going to be, like, a revenge angle in the sequel? Like, you threw me to the side, and now you want me to be your consigliere again.
I don't think so, because it was Vito's wish for it to be that way. So he was respecting his... surrogate father's wish. Mm-hmm. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really, it'd be interesting to see the dynamic between him and Michael, because that really wasn't shown. Like, we saw the dynamic between him and Sonny,
right?
But we never saw it really with Michael, so that'd be interesting.
That's actually a great point. I can't really think of, there's only one scene I can think of where him and Michael have like a significant exchange, and that's when Michael's like, let's go kill the Turk, and he's like, I just told you, I just got through yelling at your brother why we can't do this. But then Michael's like, we own a bunch of newspaper reporters, right? Why the fuck can't we have them skew the story about the Turk and the crooked cop who punched me in the head? And he's just like, oh yeah, we could do that. And it's sort of like this, damn, this guy's good kind of respect scene that I thought was really cool and mm-hmm. part of Tom. But I almost wonder if it was that, like, oh, what good am I? If Michael can think like this on his own, what good am I?
That's true.
You know? Which I think, arguably, on a narrative level, is probably why they removed Tom from the movie. Because him and Michael are, like, the same... they become the same character at a point. Yeah. So it's kind of just be repetitive. So narratively, you got to get him out of there. So take him out, replace him with Vito. but it worked out.
Sonny could have backed up. It just doesn't make sense to me. And that I really would have loved to see Michael that year he was back.
I totally agree.
I know I said that in the lost episode, but yeah, that was, I think that would have been really interesting.
Absolutely. I think you're totally right about Sonny being able to back up. So the way Sonny dies, I know. It's so, if you guys have
so
seen,
dramatic.
Yeah, he gets stuck at like a fucking
toll booth.
Toll booth, thank you. And it's like he could have backed up. Or better yet, have a car. I think I said this last time too. Have a car fucking pull up behind him with guys with guns. Like, solve your problem right there.
And he got out of the car, which was like the worst. Like, what did you expect to do? Like, these guys have like bigger guns than you.
When he's like, when Marty's like, yeah, Doc, like, let's take the DeLorean and we'll just come down on top of him. And Doc is just like, no, Marty, this is like a, you know, a stainless steel car and he's in a Ford, whatever the fuck, he'll tear us to shreds. It's like, I'm sure there's a degree of resistance between the Tommy gun bullets and, like, this car. Like, you're probably safer in the fucking car. And just crouch down, smash your hand on the gas, and just, the Jesus, take the wheel here, man. Like, just fucking go.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I think Sonny's death is unearned in that regard. Like, you could have worked it out. Plus the fact that, like, the rest of the Corleone goons are so far behind him.
Far away, yeah.
This whole shooting, it's not like we're seeing the same, it's not like the horse head scene where we see the same shot over and over and over, like two or three takes of it. It's like a sequence of this man being, like, riddled with bullets. And you're telling me he drove this car so fucking fast that these other guys are just like a solid 15 to 20 minutes behind him when they left at like the exact same time. This is like elementary school math. Train leaves the station at X time, another train Y time, they're going certain speeds. When do they meet up? It's like they're right fucking behind each other. They should have at least seen it happen. But yeah, I totally agree. Sonny did not earn that death at all. Or the movie didn't earn Sonny's death in that regard. And yeah, I agree with you on Michael's sort of year in America.
Yeah, I agree with you, Patrick. I would have loved to see more of that.
Yeah, like, we saw his time in Italy. We got to see him dicking around. I mean, we waste, I think I said this last time, we waste, I feel like, a ton of time in Italy that just, like, I don't need it.
Yeah.
We have a relatively long love montage between him and the deadpan girl for a minute. Like, it goes on. And I'm like, I get it. Like, they're going to get married. Thank you for telling me this. I don't need to see their entirety of their courtship, except for maybe at the very least to see, like, how it's done there. Because I think I commented on this while we were watching it, Amber, was like, man, that would really be, like, awkward as hell to have your entire family basically following you while you're going on, like, an evening walk with your girlfriend, you know? It'd be weird. Or I guess in her case, her boyfriend. But yeah, when he comes back, like, we could shave a good chunk of that time off. Like, when we first see him in Italy again, he's just, like, I think they're literally, like, throwing rocks at an old farmhouse. Like, they're not even, like, doing anything. And
yeah.
All of that is just, like, so that we can have him be told to go somewhere else. Because it's not safe. Like, he needs to move.
Yeah.
Okay, why do I need this? Why do I need to be told he has to go somewhere else?
Well, I appreciate, like, the location. And I appreciate, like, you know, going back to your roots. Which I didn't think they stressed enough on that to even, like, make a point with it. Because everything was so sped up. Like, in the next scene, it's like, oh, he's, like, he meets this girl. And then the next scene, oh, he's already married. Oh, next scene, she gets herself blown up. Like, like, it just gets really, like, sped up to the point where it doesn't really make any sense. So it's, like, either do something more with that or, like, fill in the, you know, the one-year gap, basically. Right. Like, from, you know, when your wife got blown up to when you return to New York.
And talk to Kay and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I don't understand is, like, I understand the narrative purpose, right? Like, he has to go to Italy. No one can know, because if they know, then they're a variable that could fuck him over. I get that. That's fine. But the narrative purpose of this whole sequence is so that he goes, I think, Patrick, you had mentioned this in the original episode, was that He goes there to go and talk to, or to get back to his roots. He goes to experience the thing he's never had, because Michael's not from Italy. He's just Italian-American guy. Like, his dad is the one who's from Italy. And so it's just like, he goes back to experience this thing he's never had. Up until this point, he's very much just an American guy. I think I might have pointed this out in the original episode, but his accent even changes when he comes back. Like, he does speak with that kind of stereotypical mobster, like, Italian flair. Whereas in the beginning of the movie, he's just talking. Like, he's just talking like an average American person, you know? And I think, Amber, to your point, the bookends for the Italian sequence feel smaller than the montage in the middle of it where he gets married. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want that. I want that relationship to matter just a little bit more to me, the viewer, because when she dies, I don't care. Like, it was all, she was a montage and a car bomb. That's it. Like, she wasn't like a character that, like, why does Michael give a shit about her? Mm-hmm. You know, he's just like, she's pretty hot. Yeah. Now we're married. Like, I feel like there's something in between where they actually have some kind of connection enough to make this count.
Like, I think it would have been interesting if, like, because he doesn't know if he's ever going to be able to go back. He just, mm-hmm. like, hopes that they're going to be able to bring him back. And every time he asks, like, they keep saying, oh, like, we don't know yet. Like, you can't go back now because it's too, it's not safe.
Right.
And so I think it would have been interesting if, like, he has this kind of monologue where he's just like, should I even go back? Like, I met this, like, nice girl.
Yeah, that'd be
good. You know, I'm living this, like, relatively nice life. And it's seemingly safe, mm-hmm. and that's where it, like, hits to where she gets blown up. That would make me care.
That would actually be, that's a really great idea. Like, I like that a lot, because the other thing I was going to mention is I think the Italian sequence, now I'm thinking about, serves another purpose besides to cause him trauma. It's also to, like, him, in him marrying this Italian girl, it's like he is, it's supposed to symbolize that he's not only falling in love with these traditions that his dad has upheld for so long, his roots and whatnot, but he is, like, fully committing. Like, when you take the whole marriage as a huge commitment and whatnot, like, he's committing full-heartedly to just doing that. And he's totally, like, fuck, mm-hmm. like, he basically said, like, fuck, hey, I'm not going back to her. I think if you added in what you said, Amber, where it's just, like, have him at least take a beat to just show the conflict of, like, do I even want to go back anymore? That would be fucking awesome. Like, just, it would just make everything, like, it would make the fact that he doesn't get to make that decision by the end, like, his wife gets killed, and he's kind of just like, I have to go back, like, and then Sonny's dead. It's just, like, all these things that happen force him to return. And all of that is subtext. And yet, we ADR in Don Corleone at the end of the film. Come on, gang. Like, flip what you're, well, flip what you have subtext for. Like, we could have done something with that. And I think it would have been great. Even if it's just him, like, deciding. Or, like, it could be as simple as him, like, writing a goodbye letter to Kate or Kay and, like, never sending it.
Yeah.
And just him narrating the letter. Like, goodbye, I'm, you know, shit's real. I'm sorry I've never written. Not coming home. And then car bomb, you know? But I totally agree. I would have loved to know what the fuck is he doing in New York for a year.
What is going on in there? Why? What is taking so long?
Because it's like, are you just sitting at home? If so, tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Like, are you on house arrest or something like that?
Or maybe better yet, that could be where your monologue goes. Him talking to Tom, or I don't know if Fredo's gone by that point, but even Fredo. And just be like, or I guess you could even be talking to fucking Vito. I would be, oh my God, do we just make this movie better? Because, like, that would be great. Like, that would give a really strong connection between the two characters of just, like, while I was there, I didn't want to leave, you know, and, like, I had to, I didn't get a choice. And it would be so fucking impactful because, like, Vito assumedly had to leave. Like, if he wanted a better life, he would have had to left Italy, which is what he did. And then, like, the better life for Michael was staying there, which is just, like, a cool concept that doesn't get explored enough. I hope it gets explored in the sequel to some degree, because, like, that feels like a lost thread. Though this movie does wrap up threads really well.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
So I have absolutely no recollection of what we originally gave this movie. Amber, let's start with you. Got three questions, though, this time.
Oh,
since
boy.
We're doing a theme month, and I believe we kind of sort of did this with Star Trek. So follow the same protocol here. In this case, what's your rating out of 10? Right? Would you suggest people watch this movie? Why not? And are there any caveats there? As we learned with Clockwork Orange, there are caveats apparently that need to be said. And finally, is this better than Goodfellas to you? And if so or if not, a quick explanation as to why.
Okay. I think I would give it a 9.5
okay.
out of 10. And would I recommend this? Yes, absolutely, unless you don't like violence.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's why a big you component a to the... Movie, I know, though. Like, what's the whole yeah. point? But yes, I would definitely recommend everybody watch it because I hadn't watched it up until now and I'm kind of kicking myself because I'm like, wow, like I waited that long to watch it.
But you now know, you get to movie. Vent and talk about all the cool things about it now.
That's
so
true.
It works
That's
out.
True.
Yeah.
And is this better than Goodfellas? Yes, but like, you know, now that we've talked about both Goodfellas and part one of The Godfather, I don't know because like I haven't seen part two, so that could really change like my perspective. But as of now, I think yes, it is a little bit better than like Goodfellas. And it's also that there's a lot of like differences between the directors that make the like it's like to each their own, I guess, with like Goodfellas and with Godfather, that they both like took such like creative freedom with it that they're both like good in their own way. It's just that Godfather has like fewer flaws with it, I guess. Right. So
okay. Patrick, same questions. Out of 10, are you suggesting it? Why not? And if there are any caveats? And which do you prefer more, Goodfellas or Godfather? And again, why for each, whichever one?
All right, so on the last episode, I gave a 9-1, not changing my score. I gave Goodfellas 9-3.
Oh, wow, so I think that might be closer than Amber's. I'd have to double check. I was writing it today, but I don't think it was that granular. Like, I think it was the difference between, like, maybe a 9 and a 9.5, or even, like, an 8.7 and a 9.5 or whatever.
Yeah, and of course, if you like mafia movies, you have to see it. If you like movies in general, you have to see it. Violence was not as bad as other movies that I think we've reviewed on this podcast.
John
so,
Wick.
Any other caveats? Not really. And then, no, it is not better than Goodfellas because I like Goodfellas' neighborhood feel. I like the comedy in Goodfellas. I thought that made it more entertaining. And it didn't have De Niro, which is saying, you know, the second one does have De Niro. He makes a whole difference, I think, in each movie. His acting and his presence on the screen, very similar to Brando's, and how it commands respect from people.
Careful what you say now, though, because I'm looking at, if you mean comparing his character in, like, Goodfellas to Vito's, to Brando's character in Godfather, I'm like, I'd have a hard disagree. But if you're saying that De Niro brings, like, Vito energy to Godfather 2, my expectations are much higher for that performance now. And I mean, wasn't he going to win like an Oscar or something for that? Did you mention that? I don't remember.
That was one of the trivia questions I asked. I cannot say no more at the end of our... I say no more.
Okay. Yeah, so for me, I actually have no recollection of what I gave this movie the first time. I do. I think I gave it like a 9.9 because I was being a facetious prick and I don't like that ending. I don't like the ending scene. I could go on and on about it, but like when they show Michael like having the fealty of the remaining families pledged to him, and they're like clearly doing that. There is absolutely nothing to hint that they're doing anything else except some weird kinky shit, which this movie gives you no grounding to like think about. They just decide to like ADR in some random Italian voice just saying Don Corleone, and it's just like, why? Like, I don't, it almost, it takes me out of it, because it's like, this is so beautiful, like I don't need any words said at the end, just give me the music and the door closing. I still don't like that scene, but I think I actually want to give this movie like, I think I want to give this movie like a 9.7 on like review. Like, and I, yeah, my score dropped. Like, this movie really makes you, it wows you when you first watch it. Like, it's like Patrick said, I think if you like movies in any capacity, I think you should at least watch this one once, whether to know if like cinema is like your cup of tea, or if it's just like, I like, you know, some brainless, you know, beat 'em up stuff or rom-coms or what have you. And that's fine. It's okay to not like a movie or to like a movie, but I have to say that like this conversation that we've all had, especially this stuff about like kind of the weird hole that is like Italy in this film, like I think it could have been improved on. I think, Amber, your idea to just have some kind of inkling that Michael has to make a choice and then he just does, he gets that choice taken away, that to me encapsulates the movie. Like, that one thing is the fucking thesis of this film in Michael's character anyway, is that he was never going to do this and he had the entire world in front of him, and then the movie is a slow burn of his character having really no choice but to do this, you know, or let his family die. And I think just having that one scene would have really like gotten rid of any subtext we could draw and done it. So it kind of brings my score down a little bit because there's room to improve. So it's like, if I call it a 10, then there's no room to improve. At least in what it gives you. And I mean, it's probably the obvious bit for me, but like, I like this so much better than Goodfellas. But again, this conversation has made me kind of go, like, you guys have made me kind of look at Goodfellas and go, you know, there is some, like, the differences between the two, it's tough to compare, but at the same time, like, there are things about Goodfellas I like more than this film. Like, I do, like, Patrick, the humor element, I can't think of a single fucking funny scene from this film. Godfather. I feel like humor is all but completely lost as far as, like, a making a joke for the audience instead of just making something I don't understand. But, Amber, can you tell us what we're doing next week on Mobster May Marathon?
So next week for Mobster May Marathon, we'll be doing Godfather Part 2, and hopefully we won't have to include it in our lost tapes this time.
Yeah, agreed. You know, as you guys know, we're jumping into the sequel to this movie that we've obviously already hinted at plenty of times. Patrick, you have noted multiple times now that it's better than this one. I think in your original list here, you put it Goodfellas
it is.
Part 2, Part 1, so I still have trouble. I think now that we've talked about it, I have a little bit more of a concept of how that movie can go. But yeah, I'm still curious how it all makes a three. What is it? What did I say? It was like 3 hours and 44 minutes or some crazy shit like that.
Yeah.
Fucking.
There better be like guns ablazing. They go to the moon.
It
like
better have humans go to the moon. Well, it's not the Fast and Furious franchise, Amber, okay?
Okay. But still, something, like, catastrophic.
I think as long as it has humor, it'll be a more complete movie.
Okay. Hopefully there's more humor.
I think between, you know, perhaps if they utilize Fredo more to do some slapstick shit, and they maybe have, because De Niro could be pretty funny. Like, I think he's...
Yeah, and if casinos are involved now...
There's gotta be some kind of goofy casino antics.
Maybe we'll see an Elvis Presley in this next.
Oh, that'd be kind of fun. She cheated on me with the Elvis impersonator. There you go. That's a joke. Put it in your movie. There you go. But until we talk about The Godfather Part 2, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Patrick.
And this is So What Happens Next, Small Screens. We'll see you guys next week.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
You shit-kicking, stinky, horse-manure-smelling motherfucker, you!
So say goodnight to the bad guy.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender.
I'm gonna make him an offer, Ken.
Carry that stink of the streets with you the rest of your life.
I like the stink of the streets. It makes me feel good. I like the smell of it. It opens up my lungs.
I want you to get this fuck where he breathes. I want you to find this Nancy Boy Elliot Ness. I want him dead. I want his family dead. I want his house burnt to the ground. I want to go to the middle of the night. I want to piss on his edge.
Say hello to my little friend.